then. So we move to agenda paper 4, which is on the provisions project. And the ISB will soon be deciding whether to start a project to make amendments to the provisions standard IAS 37. And we on the staff have been gathering evidence of possible problems with IAS 37. And on the basis of the evidence that we've gathered to date, we think we'll probably be recommending to the board that it focuses its project on three targeted improvements to IAS 37. And these are listed on page 4 of your handout. No, page 3, sorry. Page 3 of your handout. And the purpose of the meeting today is to find out if you agree that the board should undertake a project to look at these three items, and if there's anything else you think it should include if it does take on a project. Let's just take them individually and start with the first topic, which is aligning the liability definition and supporting guidance with the conceptual framework. The problem that's been identified is described on page 4, and it relates really to liabilities where they sort of arise from a series of events, and after one event, the entity has some sort of obligation, but it's conditional on future action, of it taking a future action that it has no realistic ability to avoid. And the question is, at that stage, does it have a liability? And the question has arisen in all sorts of contexts, but it sort of came to a head with levies when the Interpretations Committee issued IFRIC 21, which takes the view that no liability arises until the obligation has become unconditional, the entity takes the action that triggers the payment of the levy. IFRIC 21 has been criticised for not providing useful information, for not being consistent with other standards, and in particular because some levies that people feel accumulate over a period are recognised at a single point in time. Because this sort of problem arises in so many different contexts, the board decided to look at it as part of its conceptual framework project. It's now issued the new conceptual framework, which has concepts on when liabilities arise in these situations. And basically, it looks for two criteria. One is that the entity has received some benefits already before the end of the period, and as a result of which it may have to make some sort of payment. And it also has no practical ability to avoid any future actions that would trigger the payment. The effects are shown in the example on page 7, and it shows how putting these new concepts into IAS 37 could change the requirements for some types of levy and similar types of obligation. And a question for you is, do you think the board should make that sort of change to IAS 37, and do you have any other comments on what the board should be doing there?
Good stuff.
So on the question of whether the board should do anything other than the three things you propose on slide 3, I think you should look into the benefit definition.
And for onerous contracts.
Onerous contracts. Because that is something after IFRS 15 has introduced this consideration of renewals for the amortization of capitalized cost of fulfilling and obtaining, that has reopened the discussion on what is a benefit.
Yes. Yeah?
And as I said earlier, to discuss in detail the cost side of the comparison and completely ignore and keep completely open the other side that you compare it with is a little bit odd. So that is something I think for me personally more important than the discount rate, because if I don't know what period to discount over, the discount rate doesn't help me a lot. I struggled with the example, but it may well be that I simply misunderstood it. I understand that you would get to a different pattern. I didn't understand why it is a ratable pattern or a per revenue euro pattern. Mm-hmm. Because why is it that the liability arises as I generate revenue, which means in a period in which I don't recognize revenue, I wouldn't incur a liability, although it is a levy that I pay for being in the market, regardless of whether I'm successful in a period with recognizing revenue. So this, I didn't get why this pattern is automatically coming from it, and because I think I could have argued different ways of pattern even after a change in the definition.
Possibly. This is an example, but in this particular example, if you had no revenue in the period, you would pay zero levy.
But it is a revenue of the year before that.
So if you had no revenue in the year before, you would pay no levy on the 1st of January.
Okay. But if I'm there in the year before and I know that I won't be able to leave the market, let's assume I take 6 months to leave the market. So latest on 1st of July, I know I will not be able to leave the market.
Yeah.
Why do I only have 50% of the liability on the books? Why don't I have the full liability on the books if I say I can't avoid it anymore? What is that I still push a portion out into Q3 and Q4 if that I can't leave the market is already set and written in stone on 30th of June? So that's why I wondered, that's why I meant with a ratable. Yeah, I understand this notion when the moment I can no longer avoid it. Mm-hmm. But if that, for instance, is on 30th of June,
yeah,
why don't I then have the entire liability on the books?
I think it's I understand your question, and I see that there's the importance of the two criteria. It's not only that you have no practical ability to avoid this levy; it's that it's arisen from past events, and that means if we go back to slide 5, the company's received the benefits. That means that it will may have to pay the levy. So it's actually earned the revenue on which it would pay the levy on the 1st of January the next year. So which means that in the example we've got, this is a sort of accumulating liability. It's not just that there's no practical ability to avoid it, it's that it's arisen from the past events, and it's that past events criterion that would link that would cause it to accumulate. But I understand what you're saying and how there could be different interpretations.
What if it was based on the revenue from 5 years ago?
Yeah.
Would you then see the expense?
If it's based on the revenue from 5 years ago, it would, applying the criteria on page 5, it would be it's received the benefits 5 years ago, and at that point it has the benefits that means that it may have to pay the liability, and at that point in time it would recognize a liability for the levy if it had no practical ability to avoid it, being that it relates to your revenue from 5 years ago.
I think that is not the purpose of today's meeting to discuss on it, but you see our question, then we should address it, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Morello?
The question is whether we agree or not with the board engaging in this project, right?
Yeah.
I think I support that engagement, but I'm curious if there are any other consequences besides the FRIC 21 that we cannot foresee now. Have you encountered something different, anything else besides the FRIC 21?
It's a good question. It's the most obvious consequence.
Yes.
I haven't encountered or found anything else from what we've done to date that would change. What we have noticed is that, in say we work through all the examples in IS 37 at the moment, from changing the concepts as proposed, I haven't identified any examples that would come to a different answer in IS 37, but the rationale would change in some cases. Mm-hmm. But the answer, I think, would be pretty much the same. But it's a really good question, and it's one that I have tried to look at and not found anything else from the examples I've looked at.
Mm-hmm. I think...
Okay, is he around now?
Can I just... one last
query.
So I think that the criteria here, especially the one related to the practical ability to avoid transfer of economic resources, it might be tempting in the future if this goes on, if it's approved, to be more relevant than the other. In practice, I think companies having these words in the standard, they might be tempted to use these specific criterion to recognize liabilities under very difficult circumstances. So, for instance, when you are in the middle of a deal, there is very, very difficult not to accept and would unavoidably result in payments in the future. So you might not have these past events, but having these words practical ability to avoid it might induce the recognition of liabilities under these circumstances. So I know it's too soon, but my recommendation would be to explore really well this what does this received benefits mean.
Yep. Okay.
I like the proposal or solution on slide 7, which is offered here. I believe this is more to do with the conceptual difference. When the liability crystallizes versus over a period of time liability arising, if you go back to the olden days of matching concept, you are trying to reintroduce the matching concept here, which was taken off, if I understand correctly. So this is good, but it is more of a conceptual change. So that needs to be addressed in the definition of liability in IAS 37.
We don't understand the word matching.
Here,
no, sorry, it was a joke.
you're bringing it back here, isn't it?
Yes.
In a way.
Do you want to answer? No.
Well, no.
Harintra?
Yeah. The conceptual framework, it talks about where the entity has no practical ability to avoid, and 37 talks about present obligation arising from past events. Now, if you are now proposing to align 37 with the conceptual framework, that's a welcome decision. Why? Because, one, it is always better to align with a conceptual framework. Two, taking any liability as to whether it should be recognized or not through a practical ability to avoid test is always a practical decision. So therefore, from industry point of view, from the practicality point of view also, I welcome this. Now, on slide 7, where you are wanting to, referring to IFRIC 21, IFRIC 21 itself has several questions. The first question is that it is possible that the entity has no practical ability to avoid the obligation, but even then, the recognition of liability will wait till such time the payment of the levy falls due. Now, first of all, 21 refers to a levy. It is not an overall this thing. It's not applicable all through. But even there, that it is possible to wait for the recognition of liability to the year one rather than in year zero where it is accruing. Secondly, it is possible that the present obligation, the settlement of which is expected to result in a cash outflow in the year zero, but but the said paragraph 8 of IFRIC 21 will allow you to do it in year one. So therefore, according to me, IFRIC 21 is an anomalous IFRIC. It has to be withdrawn. And when you are doing a targeted improvement of 37, it is high time we withdraw that. So that is the first point. Second issue was the provision of onerous contract that has already been discussed, so therefore I'm not discussing it again. On the third issue, specify whether the rate at which the provisions are discounted should reflect the entity's own credit risk or not. Now, IFRIC update in March 2011, they dealt with this problem. Our final decision was that the committee noted that this request for guidance would be best addressed by the part of board project to replace IAS 37 with a new liability standard. Therefore, they left it. They did not address it, but they did one good thing. They recognized, committee noted, that the IAS 37 does not explicitly state whether or not own credit risk should be included. The committee understood that the predominant practice today is to exclude own credit risk. Now, if the predominant practice is to exclude credit risk and it's a targeted improvement, I am of the opinion that it should not be altered much. In other words, what I'm trying to say is that the own credit risk should not be included.
Okay, thanks for these comments. Waki has withdrawn. Any other comments on revision?
Maybe overall, it looks to me as if you try to achieve matching.
As
Martin said, you're not allowed to use that word, and though you're trying to somehow get to matching, as I said earlier, this I think doesn't get you to the matching idea. And I think the criticism about IFRIC 21 was that it wasn't matching. Yeah, and so that's why I always recommend to call a spade a spade. So if you want to introduce matching for this, introduce matching for it. Yeah. But to try to get it through some strange thing that you admit yourself could be interpreted in a different way and get to a different pattern doesn't help, because then we move away from something that is pretty clear. IFRIC 21, people don't like it, but it is pretty clear.
It's very clear.
Let's not move to something that half of the people like more, but the others use in a way that it shouldn't be used.
Would you address the topic? Would you recommend the board to
I'm address? A fan of matching, and as a preparer, I'm allowed to use the term. So that's so, why I
because
I
that,
think
that's
matching
the question
is a good
here. Should this is this something the board should look at, or is it?
If the board is prepared to start using the word matching, yes. If it is to somehow get to something, because then it would be superior to IFRIC 21.
Yeah.
Yeah, but trying to do this wouldn't get us to anything superior to IFRIC 21.
Thanks for that, Christoph. Okay.
Are we discussing in detail on the discount rate?
I would be interested to hear if anybody has any comments, anybody else has comments on the discount rate. The middle topic, the onerous contract, is obviously very much dependent on the outcome of the narrow scope amendment that's going ahead at the moment. So the other one that is of most interest is on interest rates, discount rates, and whether the board should specify either to exclude or include credit risk.
At least based on my experience or whatever I have seen, companies are not including in the discount, the default risk of its own default risk, which I believe is the right thing to do. The reason is otherwise it creates doubts about the going concern of the entity. If you are trying to bring in the default risk of the own company, that would create an imbalance between the framework within which we are preparing the financial statements. Currently in IFRS 9, we are taking into account on the receivable side, the doubtful debt provision, the expected credit loss of the counterparty. Even though I make provision for the receivable on my balance sheet, I don't expect the counterparty to do the same. But here, I think the suggestion is to do that, which I don't agree.
But just to follow up on Barindra's points, because you referred to the Interpretation Committee discussion of 5 or 6 years ago, it appears there is more diversity now than the committee identified at the time. That's the reason the question is being asked now. And we're not pushing for an answer one way or the other, but we understand there is some diversity. And so the question is, should the board step in and try and remove the diversity?
First, lucky.
Yeah, generally speaking, it's a good idea to reflect credit risk in this kind of, the variation of, asset exposure. The question is, how should we estimate the credit risk? Can we refer to external credit risk modeling, or can we use internally developed credit risk, methodology? So there's some freedom. That's what something I want to confirm.
That would be something that the board would have to look at. It's the question really at the moment is, should the board try to specify whether companies include their own credit risk or exclude it from the discount rate, and not at the moment how they would go about measuring it.
That detail at this moment.
Yeah.
Okay.
Christoph?
I struggle to specify what interest rate to use if I don't know what the purpose of discounting is. Yeah. And IL 37 is not very clear on what the purpose of discounting is. If you think about own credit risk, it appears to be we're looking at the reporting entity. Mm-hmm. Don't we have to look at the individual liability? To give you one example, if I'm sued for whatever, and now I know that if there is a payment after all court proceedings, that will be 6-7 years out. And now I need to think about how to discount it. But at the same time, I know that if I have to pay, I've got to pay plus interest. Isn't this interest that the court would charge me the right interest to discount this liability? And then we are more in an interest rate that depends on the individual liability rather than looking at an interest rate that is specific to the reporting entity. And without knowing what we are measuring, it's so difficult to now say what should the discount rate be. So I think we would need specifications of what do we want to achieve with discounting in IL 37.
So we should address it.
I don't think it would be the highest on my priority list, not even within IS 37.
Ian?
I think there's a wider discussion about discount rates across all of the standards, which is legitimate to have. I would strongly recommend not actually picking on one particular standard and trying to sort of solve all the problems there. I think it's very true, it's flexible, and I think you should allow preparers to make a judgment about what the most appropriate way to get the time value of money in. And just to be transparent, what we do, we don't have very many long-term provisions, mainly in the legal and environmental areas. We just tell the local affiliate to use the same discount rate they're using in their local pension plan on the grounds that the expected outflows will be plus or minus around about the same. And this is sort of, you can operationalize that, you can audit it, and it's nice and sort of doable. So I wouldn't really recommend to touch this one. I'm not sure there's a general problem about discount rates, but I'm not sure.
Not in isolation, right?
Not in isolation.
That's exactly the same comment.
Stephen?
I agree with Christoph, actually, in that we need to know what the purpose of the discount rate is, because we've automatically assumed its time value of money there. Whereas if you're including credit risk, then you're introducing another risk element into that. I guess my personal opinion would be to leave it alone, because it sounds quite challenging. But if you are seeing people who are building credit risk into their discounted provisions, which presumably takes the provision down in value, then I guess that worries me.
We are, yes.
Okay, so what I'm hearing is maybe that we should not address it, not in isolation. Okay. Then we go to lunch. Lunch is in the kitchen.
Maybe only briefly, let me remind you that we agreed this morning to now use these. Yeah. So before you forget everything about the sessions we had so far before lunch, that may be the right moment to check boxes.
Okay. So we're coming back at 1, right?
Yeah.